Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Okay, I got the reverb off. Not feeling too hot. I was sleeping. I apologize for being late. Scotty and who else is here? Jimmy, my two comrades. Take it over, okay?
Okay. If you're going to join this show, please press 1. If you want to join the show, please press 1.
Hold on for a minute, Scotty. We got Brian. We've got Adrian. We got Carrie. Carrie, say something to me, baby.
Well, Carrie. I'm glad you're up. Can you hear me?
Yes, dear.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Well, waking up, Sleeping Beauty.
I am trying. I just woke up to hear your voice, baby. All right, here
hi,
we go.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody, she says. Say hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Adrian.
Hello, better.
There's the other sexy voice. Okay, Brian. We got 440, that's Mike, I think. We got Brian, and I think, and somebody's phone is messing up.
I think Donnie's resuscitated.
It's gone. Okay, guys, take over. I'm alive. Go.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Scott. Brian.
You already said that, Scott.
So what's new? Well, I said hi to Jimmy. I said hi to you.
I don't.
Well, Jimmy's there saying hi to everybody, and I'm sorry John's feeling under the weather. If I could help you out with a little, you know, shot of something, name your juice, I can bring it over, brother.
Sorry, Jimmy. You ain't giving me a shot of nothing. No juice, you know what I mean? According to a clown, there's nothing wrong with being gay, but I ain't gay.
It all starts with a little
alcohol.
Prick.
What the hell are you talking about, Fred?
Well, you're talking about a shot. It scared me. My butt.
Oh.
I'm
sorry. I'm not like Biden. I'm not like Biden or Brandon.
Okay.
Don't hurt if you don't clinch.
Oh, good Lord, I'm clinching. Go ahead and take over, guys.
I was wondering if anybody had seen the video of after the debates with Frank Scroggin and Schlagen or whatever, Stoggin.
It's struggling.
Yeah. Struggling, yeah, and that is perfect. Ray Curry's video, vote often and vote, what was it? Vote often.
Vote early and vote often.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what the vote often to that little group he had was. Because
yeah,
I think, aren't you supposed to only get...
She's going to have all the deceased UAW members vote, I believe, because I've had people call me that their husband's been dead 8-9 years, and guess what? They got a copy of Solidarity Now magazine. Think about that, Scott. Are they going to pull a Democratic poll and have all the dead people vote? Because they know Danjan's dead, so why the fuck did you send him something, people? I've already wrote a letter to the monitors. We need a different monitor. This prick's not being equal, period.
Wait. And you're saying Dick got a bill.
He got a copy of his magazine 5 days before me. My head and my sick thinking is now they know Dick's on international staff. They're going to try and corrupt his vote. And then they're like, wait a minute, they know he's voting. What the hell?
Yeah.
They're going to have his, they're going to vote for him? We have no way to know who votes, whether they're alive or dead. And then I never had a person that's related to the people in law, Scott. Her husband's passed away, and he's been retired for 19 years. They got their first copy of the magazine last weekend, and it encouraged them to vote. He's deceased. Think about it, people.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Oh man.
Wow.
Well, that's been the theme.
Here we go.
Get more people to vote because they think that it's just the minority. They can't, you know, they think the majority supports them still is what it is.
Oh, my gosh. People got to know about this. That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. Do you know how many UAW members there are? My dad. I got to call my sister.
He told you that 1.1 million, Don, in his own statement, he said there's 1.1 auto UAW retirees. Half of them are dead if they vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're dead. Half of them definitely are dead. Wow, that is amazing. There's no way to win this election if that happens, guys.
Maybe. Again, yeah, it's all under the assumption that the majority support them. But,
well,
you know, I mean, they always use that silent majority as their, you know, that's their, well, what about the silent majority? You have strong arguments, and they always say that. Well, the thing is, the silent majority already spoke.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
they were
true.
At the convention, and just amongst the delegates, the first round of voting for the IAB pay raise failed. Now,
right.
It's a controlled convention with controlled delegates, and it failed whenever they didn't have accountability. The second round where they had to stand is where it passed. So does the silent majority stand with them? I don't think so.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. That means everybody's got a vote that is alive anyway.
If everybody votes, it could worsen their results.
Yeah.
They could end up looking worse than what they did with just the minority voting.
Right.
Well, one thing's for certain, the tactics haven't changed. You know, it's just like politics at the local level. They're just doing it on a broader scale. It's the same exact politics, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Scott, if you hear anything kind of snaky at the truck plant, let me know, because I know management. They want the same people because they get their way. So they'll go out of their way to help Curry, and like they do with your shop chairman.
Yep. Glad you brought him up. Real quick side note. His brother got hired in the plant about 2 years ago. He went into trades, or just got into trades. He's now one of the Dodge 46 safety reps.
Oh, no way.
Just saying.
Oh, my God.
So he's got a local international appointment.
Yep.
After 2 years.
Nice.
That's beautiful. Wow.
Anyway, I just wondered. I'm glad you said that. So that just reminded me of that. So anyway, we can carry on.
Wow. I told him to run too. I thought he'd be a good. I'm sorry. I apologize.
He ran the wrong way.
Yeah, he sure.
Yeah, what's interesting is I seen something here recently. It was a post from Curry's people. Encouraging the people at the plant level. They're basically taking Brian's idea, you know. The people at the plant level that support me, go ahead and, if you would, print out some flyers and drop them on the tables, you know. He's not directly telling them to do it. He's just giving suggestions. Well, Curry's team is doing exactly the same thing. So it would be interesting, though, because just to make those aware that aren't aware, the company is not allowed to involve themselves in elections, whether it be local or even a national election. So anybody that caught using company stationery to print out campaign letters and dropping them on the floor, if you're aware of it, go ahead and report that.
Definitely.
They can't use the stationery. They can't use the company printers. They can't use none of that.
No, you're right.
Have we talked about what's going on down at the Trenton engine plant?
No.
No, go ahead.
I'm just interjecting. I don't actually have any information on it, but I'm sure somebody does.
Okay.
Is that the one where they went to critical status?
Oh. That Nipco?
That what? No.
Nipco.
I'm about
the subsidiary then.
Yes, that's it.
He cut out. What did he say?
Yes, Scott, that was it. The one with the subsidiary that's not union coming in and taking over a third of the plan or some stuff like that.
Oh,
you're not talking about Tommy Catalis, are you?
No, that's local Ford 600.
Oh, okay. Okay. I noticed he got appointed to the Solidarity House. Nikki,
yeah, he sure did.
Nikki's
sure
son.
Did.
I remember.
No, I
Nikki
think he's had a position. I think that's a new position for him.
Oh, wow. Well,
like, he went from kind of
bargain.
Like missionary to spread eagle.
Oh my. Oh my.
Yeah.
Damn.
The saddest thing is his dad showed him how to do it.
Yeah, he sure did. Nikki.
Homeschooled.
I remember Tommy when he was about 3 years old, when he lived down the street from my dad. Nikki did. So Tommy was named after Nikki's daddy, Tom Catalis. And
well,
I can't believe his mother's still alive. Go ahead, guys.
The Trenton thing, I read a couple of things. There was one thing, somebody shot German, put the workforce in critical status. And then I'll have to look. And then the Trenton thing, I can't remember. I think I heard something about that.
Well, then International overruled the critical status and let it go. So they had a problem.
Right.
Their local union office put in a objection to it, but International overruled.
Oh, man.
Right.
And they're not even in the freaking plant. That's beautiful.
Nope. Yep.
Beautiful. Now,
there you go. Vote Team Curry, right? Brownie?
Yeah.
No, yeah. See what you get?
Why did they vote? Why did they go to status? Bad, you know. I can't remember nothing, guys. I'm sorry. Hold on. We got another. Oh,
I've
that's,
never seen a reason for why. Just that
no.
The local management wanted it. They opposed it, and that... they went ahead and approved it anyway, even though they, I read a petition by all the local structure stating that if they did make that step, that they were going to resign. All the signatures were on it.
And
but
they
never, I never read the reasoning why.
Region 1A director granted the critical plant status to the parts supplier NEAPCO, NEAPCO, against a strong opposition. The unit's committee out of Local 723 disagreed and all resigned. So, Mr. Curry, where's the team in your resignations? Again, you lied. You lied to this membership when
wow.
You said there are no leaders. You lied to this when you said you wanted the retirees to vote. That's why I said this monitor led these people flat-ass lie.
Wow.
Well, and the other thing was I thought the critical status was just a one-time deal to make up production losses due to the strike. How did that become a regular part of their operations?
No answer.
It just says the Curry team and Region 1 director sided with the company instead of the unit and the committee, and the entire committee has now resigned. Another shining example how the company sellouts, the union's gratefulness, and Team Curry are building a stronger company.
Wow.
Okay, that's one. So let's let the other shoe fall now. Okay, I grabbed this from Brian. This was written September 29th. Brothers and sisters of Local 372, on Thursday, September 28th. The local bargaining committee had a meeting with the plant manager and the HR manager labor rep regarding the status of the North plant and retool of the South plant for merger of PSU and PSC engine production. The International Union and the local bargaining committee were informed that a project was approved to relocate Mopar operations from Redford to the North plant starting June of 2023. This will include 200 Syncrian employees, which is a subsidiary of Mopar, that are non-union employees. This project also includes IRF warehouse jobs, which we currently are doing, and will approximately add an additional 20 jobs. These jobs will continue to be done by the Trenton Engine UAW workers until further notice. Eventually, the current IRF jobs we are doing will be moved up front, and Mopar will use back portion of the North plant. There are still discussions with Region 1A and the International on this matter. We were also informed that sometimes in the month of October, the North plant assembly will be only one shift, with some matching or machining departments possibly staying two shifts or having a partial crew. This will result in approximately 115 indefinite layoffs from the complex. The North plant is still scheduled to go down December 1st, and the South plant is scheduled to go down March of 2023 for the retool. When we come back from the retool, the South plant is currently scheduled to be a three-shift operation, which employ approximately 645 non-skilled trade employees. We were also informed that the skilled trades will need another 178 employees after the retool of the South plant to support three shifts of production. Currently, we have 216 tradesmen. These numbers can always change, but the bargaining committee wanted to keep you informed with the latest information told us. Your bargaining committee was able to secure the dates for the Michigan Industrial Shoe Truck coming to our plant to use your local bargain $75 shoe voucher. The dates are 10-19, 10-20, 11-21, 11-22. These times we post the plant employees will also be able to use their shoe voucher in Toledo and Redford, will order off the website after 10-5. Make no mistake, we're in battle with the other engine plants for a future product, and we have to prove ourselves again with the PSU-PCS production belt plant. The main thing is that Stellantis looks for our quality, cost per unit, operational production efficiency, and absenteeism. The bargaining committee will continue to keep you informed and new updates. So they will be bringing some people. What's that?
Can you send me a link or a pic to that document? Is that bulletin?
Sure. This
yeah,
might.
It just seems, because the way I just heard you describe it is that there are going to be non-union and union companies working on the same real estate.
Yeah,
that
plus their skilled trades, that was 200. They only have room for, what did you say, Scott, 173 or something like that?
178, I think.
I mean, it's one thing to work at an LLC.
So there's going to be laid off skilled trade. They're losing at least an additional shift. I'm not sure how many shifts they run, but they're going down to one.
22. Losing 22.
Yeah.
Wow. And Curry okayed all this, right?
Well, it's Curry, or would it be Brownie? Would it be Cindy Estrada?
You're missing something, though. I mean, if they did that before, if they ran an LLC, it would not be on the same real estate, would not be sharing the same buildings as the union workers. Now,
we do.
Some of the GM buildings have not non-union trades, but they're lower pay scale. Like Aramark does the building trades for Parma, you know, for the General Motors, but that's not, they're not doing production work in the same facility.
Right. Ours do. We have an LLC.
Wow.
That's part of our amalgamated union, and they have a very much lower pay scale than what we do.
And then look at Lordstown coming up.
Wait a minute.
It's going to go be acting, pumping out soon, too, of non-union electric vehicles.
Wow.
Wait a minute. There was a mention of this in the debate, and Zapp said specifically that the LLCs were inside of a unit facility performing production work, and it was right in the debate.
Oh,
He got very hostile when he said it.
No. Not General Motors. But I did send it to you, Mike, in Messenger. So you got that?
Wow.
So did you see it?
Send it to 440. JC, buddy. I think you got me mixed up with Turner. I think you got me mixed up with Mike Turner.
That's said.
Right, though. If I say anything good, credit the guy for anything I say that's good. He's a good dude.
I can paste it in the chat room, too.
Do that.
Oh, we don't
just
have
so
a chat room.
I can look at it because...
Hey, Don? Yeah. All right. Oh, wait a minute. Let me refresh. There we go.
Where's it be?
I don't know if it'll show or not. No, I don't think it's going to let me.
You know what? I'll just...
Yeah, let's get the show moving. Brian, Mike, do you guys got something to say?
No, I ain't got nothing to say at this point.
I was looking. I see the laws thing come out. I sent it to Scott. I didn't realize that was part of them. It was authored by Charlie A. McDaniel. It's about Richie, I don't know how to say his name, Laterney, that's running for your VP.
Laterno, yeah.
Yeah, because of course some experiences he forgot to mention. He was already on international stamp once before. He misused his powers and had sexual harassment, offering up vagina stiffening at big parties. They sent his coked-ass, drunk-ass back to Fort Wayne, Indiana. When he returned in 2009, his secretary was discharged. Arbitration, she lost the case. It goes on, and it carries on. It's on a web page here. I think I posted it to Scott. It's actually, you can go read this whole thing. It's on members of the UAW now. And that's actually a real strong page for Team Curry. I want you all to know that. So you can go look at all their lies. They're there. Take it away, boys.
Yeah, and even if you look at it, being that Sean Fain is part of the administrative caucus, and so is Ray Curry, if one of them were to win and one of them were to lose, they're not losing anything. They both get a company and UAW pension. They both got a good health care package. And on top of it, if, say, hypothetically, Sean Fain lost, and Ray Curry wins, who's to say that Ray Curry won't bring Sean Fain up somewhere else?
Right.
That's right.
2601.
I mean, actually, they don't even need to bring him up. I mean, he's still going to hold that position as administrative assistant to the Chrysler department. So he's not losing
right.
his position. And I mean, technically, I mean, who's to say if Sean Fain doesn't win that he don't put Ray Curry in a different position?
That's true, too.
Yeah, 260, you're on.
Either way, they got control.
Sure they
do. Same people got control.
Hello, everybody. How we doing?
Hey,
hello.
Mike. Fantastic.
Well, that's Mike.
Hey, Mr. Turner.
Don, I hope
you're getting
credit
for my evil deeds.
It sounded like earlier you were not doing well or feeling well. I hope you're doing good, brother.
Oh, yeah, I am. Carrie talked to me. I'm doing fine now.
Okay.
Thank God. Thank God, baby.
There you go, sweetie.
Well, I was doing like a video thing with a brother earlier, Ben Bell, and then I got on here late, but I was kind of just jumping on to listen to see. Honestly, I don't know what you're talking about at the moment. I was bouncing back and forth doing stuff, but yeah, I'm here now.
I'll bring up real quick on a couple things we were talking about. The first thing that comes to mind was the LLCs inside of General Motors. Do they have that at Fort Wayne also, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much everywhere within General Motors.
Right.
Wow.
Now, that was brought up that wasn't supposed to be allowed. I guess I missed that in the vice president's debate. And they said
they put a stop to it.
And
I don't know
didn't.
If you're saying it in reference to General Motors or some other company, but if it's happening in Chrysler on a regular basis, I mean, it's a little obfuscation to say that they put a stop to it. Just because you put a stop to it in one place, if you're aware that it's going on in at a different manufacturer, you know, making that statement is projecting that it's not happening. You know
right.
what I mean?
Are you referring to outsourcing? I assume. I think.
He's talking about non-skilled labor, non-union companies working inside of sharing real estate and buildings with the core traditional workers performing production work.
Yes. No. To my knowledge, that is happening in every GM facility. Everyone.
Wow.
To my knowledge. You know, it goes back to like the 2008-2009 period. Sub-council meetings I went to, basically, that's where, you know, most members know what, I hope they know, what lines of demarcation means, right, with skilled trades. Most members, I think they understand what that means. Skilled trades people definitely understand what that means. Basically, we had lines of demarcation, you know, where a pipe fitter is a pipe fitter, electrician's an electrician, a carpenter's a carpenter. And basically what was fed down to all the locals from international was that we can do subsequential work where a pipe fitter can be sitting there, but if something breaks that needs a nail and a hammer, he can walk over and hit that nail with the hammer. That's the easiest way I can describe it. They bled all the lines of demarcation together, where what the companies truly want is skilled trades in a team format that can just supply the line with what it needs, instead of specialty people that are focused and undereducated on certain elements like electrician, pipe fitter, carpenter, stuff like that. You know, a millwright, those people were they were specialized in what they could do. That what they truly want is a very small group of those people to respond to those matters, but they want them to do insequential work where, like I said, you can have a pipe fitter or millwright grab a hammer and nail and put a nail where it's needed. That's the easiest way I can describe it. Maybe that's not correct.
He's on a path to non-union.
Well, they did incorporate that in the last national contract, where they when they shaved down the trades, they tried to combine. They did combine the trades, so now we have third-party maintenance, and we also have our skilled trades. And the only ones they couldn't combine was electrician, because the electrician is with a federal and state licensing. So you can combine a millwright and a machine repairman and others. You just can't combine them with electrician. You can combine a pipe fitter.
Yep.
HVAC.
Yep.
Yes.
You are 100% correct. That's where they kept electricians, because they had
right.
by
so
law.
So even
if those laws weren't there, they would have done that. They broke down the lines of demarcation. They got rid of them. And unfortunately, beyond that, that's where, like what you're talking about, we do have, as far as I know, in every General Motors facility and probably damn near every Ford and Chrysler facility, we have groups of people that are actually, you know, trying to make a living, you know, for their family, that were brought on under the guise of skilled trades, and they weren't given the skilled trades benefits, pay, or education that are sitting there floating around, driving around on carts, responding to matters.
And furthermore, in that same language, if I remember right, they wanted the team leaders of the production to assist the skilled trade.
Yes, certainly. And that's another word for incidental, where if a team leader can walk up to a robot facility and press restart, that's what they say is acceptable. They want them to keep the line going, press restart, and let it go. As the skilled trade guys come back going, hey, guys, I'm telling you right now, something's broke that we have to fix. But what the companies truly want is that initial response to keep the line going. And that's one half of it. Demarcation are very important.
Right. I need to interrupt. I need to interrupt Adrian. After Mike gets done with his explanation, would you tell people how to donate? And because we have 43 people in the switchboard. So if you'd like to join, push one on your keypad and I'll get you right on.
Sure do.
Okay, dear.
Yeah, honestly, I'm dumb. I am done. I'll sum that up. That is the truth, is that there is a very good reason for lines of demarcation. These people were experts in their trades. And
right. What
has transpired as the companies has broke them up, and unfortunately, our union has agreed to it to the point where it is now, where we do have people floating around on carts responding to things that they're not educated to respond to. And unfortunately, I don't have it. I wish I did, because I think everybody out there can comprehend. There is probably a very long list of people that have been injured doing things that they were not trained to do. I'll leave it at that.
At Ford, they got it where the engineers can work and do that stuff on the line too. And I know for a fact there's some quote unquote engineers without an engineering degree that used to be production workers.
Honestly, because their mindset really is that, hey, something goes down, something happens, anybody can go up and press a button. Anybody can go up and say, hey, it's okay, moving on. We all know that's not really true. That we have special trades for a reason.
That's a very interesting thing, because they got engineers that are performing the work. You know, you don't want them doing hourly work, but there always was a supplemental in the agreement that would allow for them for experimental purposes. So why not just put the engineers on the job? They can prove them out.
if they want to put it down, it looks good on paper,
get your ass up there and do the job.
They can give anybody a title, even if that person don't have an engineering degree. Apparently, because I know for a fact, I used to work with a guy and he went, he was working in an engineering position without an engineering degree. I know that person. Wow. I know it to be factual.
Damn.
Believe that.
Does he hold a license
Go ahead.
Well, you can be an engineer and not have a degree, apparently, because I've seen it with my own two eyes.
Well, it's a custodial engineer. Do you think he went to 6 years of college to clean toilets?
I guess they were
seriously,
counting
if you
that.
Give him like Kerry said, if you give him a title, it's just a title. If it fulfills something in the contract as an exclusion, if an engineer does that for testing or what this, that, or the other, yeah, right. Then they've met their end. That's why they gave them the title. I mean, you can give them any title you want.
Okay.
Exactly. Right there it is.
This
just like you give the title of international president to Ray Curry. He's not really a president. Just saying.
Yeah, just like he wasn't elected, but he was. But he wasn't.
But was he?
No, he was. Oh my gosh! I guess
hey, Fuzzy,
if you're
Fuzzy was
a
bear. Fuzzy was he had
people.
No hair.
Yeah. Adrian.
Curry needs the story.
Start it,
oh
Adrian.
Yeah.
Tell it, Adrian.
Oh yes.
Yes.
If you'd like to donate to Brian Keller's committee fund for his campaign, you can do it by Cash App, which is $committeeBLK, or you can send a check or money order to Brian Keller for IUAW president, P.O. Box 2483, Belleville, Belleville, Michigan, 48112.
Give that address again, please.
The P.O. Box is P.O. Box 2483, Belleville, Michigan, 48112.
All right. And get a pen. If you didn't get it the first time, Adrian will give it again before the show's over. And Brian, did you mention that you're going to be on this show?
No, I didn't mention that.
Of course not. But we got 44 people. Thank you, Brian, for promoting the show. I appreciate that. That's okay.
I'm sorry. We had a committee meeting today, so I've been kind of busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say, join me at 7 o'clock on UAW Factory Whistle Show. Yeah, that's tough. That would be a tough one, Brian. Go ahead. And you'll make a good president, though, I'll tell you that. And that's
I don't know.
Oh, everybody can slip up. Go ahead, guys.
So, if you would like to join the show, please press 1 on your phone now. You can join the show because I thought we might have had another guest that was going to come on the show, but.
Well, we got 734 is on right now. I just put 734-430 on, and there's a 9. This might be Paul. I don't know. Could be. Is this? Who is? Oh, this is 810. I'm sorry. 810, you're on.
Hi, guys. Clint. Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. Hello.
My son had his music on in the background. Come on.
Yeah, I started dancing there. Go ahead, guys. Somebody
734. Are you there?
Hello, brothers and sisters. How are you doing tonight?
Hello.
Very
doing
good.
Well.
I'm from the Avco Drivelines. I thought I'd chime in a little bit about that, clear some stuff up for you guys.
Well, go ahead.
The Avco Drivelines, critical status plant.
The plant where all the committee people quit.
Definitely.
No, they actually pulled the resignation letter. They are back in their rightful positions.
You got everybody's attention.
I'm sorry?
Are you a worker or what are you?
I am a floor worker and a local position holder at the hall.
Okay.
They pulled it and, okay, I got you.
The company asks every year about this time for critical plant status because it's dysfunction junction in their management office. Every time they've asked, year after year, they've been declined, whether it be Browning, even Laura Dickerson declined it last year. This plant has never deserved critical plant status because they do not know how to manage their own people, their front office, anything. There's fair language for the overtime for both sides, hourly workers and management. They don't know how to utilize it properly. That's why my committee was in strong opposition of critical plant status. The only reason Laura
So Laura Dickerson was behind all that, right?
To gain critical plant status, the plant manager of NEAFCO has to reach out to our region director, Laura Dickerson, and it has to be only approved by her. And instead of her reaching out to my committee, she went ahead and just called the Ford and GM department, verified their October work schedule. I said, oh, you guys are running a heavy month. Here you go, NEAFCO. You guys get your critical status. Never once did she ever talk to my committee and my committee present their case on this is all the shit that's going on. We have volunteers that want to work. They don't even utilize them. Period.
Wow. So we you're one of the committee people that resigned?
No, I'm not. We just had our meeting today, and it was pretty much all laid out in front of us. Well, what happened behind closed doors? And
wow.
Yeah. On a weekly basis, we have 40 to 50 people that are not put on the overtime schedule.
Well, here's the more interesting question. I mean, because everybody just heard about this. We know what's going on. We don't know the internals, but here's the question. After they resigned, I know that was quite an embarrassment to the Solidarity House. I'm just curious what happened as far as the mechanics to bring them to pulling their resignation and coming back on. Do you have any details of what conversations might have happened from the Solidarity House to your local committee to persuade them possibly? Or did they
If they had meetings with region, that's obviously behind closed doors. We won't know that.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you.
But today at the meeting, they said they sat down as a committee and let's take a vote on it. Yes, no, maybe. What do we want to do here, guys? And they went through all the alternates, all the health and safety people, and they said, screw it, pull it. We'll stay on. We only have a few more months before negotiations. We'll finish this out, and we're going to make region's life hell. We already started a petition. We already started a petition to remove Laura Dickerson. Obviously, that's a feat in itself. But that's
so there's going to be some changes in the district.
Where can I sign that petition?
Well,
me too.
We got to get our own people to sign. And then Brian himself knows it's quite a feat. I mean, you got to go 10 different locals. Or, you know, there's two different ways to go about it. But it's a feat in itself to get somebody of that stature removed from their position.
Damn.
Yeah.
You need 15 locals from five different states.
Right. We figured out some rough math. By the end of it, we need 25,000 signatures, three-quarter of them to vote yes. You know, it's a feat in itself. But, hey, obviously you keep pushing those papers up the way you keep the wheels moving, and it causes noise. And people don't like noise in our organization.
An election too, so I mean that kind of press. You know, even if you can't remember.
Well, that's the thing. By the time you get the charges done on Laura Dickerson, I mean November's going to be here. She might end up being voted out by the time you get done with the process of trying to remove her. Anyways,
there's no one running against her.
She needs one vote.
She's running unopposed.
Oh, is she?
She's running unopposed. She needs one vote.
She doesn't even, you know, she's already won, folks.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why she doesn't
appear on the slate.
Oh. Okay.
You're going to have to get the trials and charges brought up on her and have her removed then.
We have a very educated membership, a very eager membership where we're at. And,
can
we're
I
all
say
on
something?
Board.
Right. Greetings to Rebel
this
Roses.
This raises a big question.
Evening, Paul.
I'm out of that region 182, and I'll tell you what, when you said she used a telephone to call anybody, I was blown away because I know that before she got that position, was a, I think she was appointed to it as the director down there. I know she wouldn't answer her phone. So that blows me away that she even knows how to use a phone.
And well, her administrative assistant is not good either.
I can tell you this past week after they put my plant in critical plant status, everyone in my plant, 600 plus, has been blowing up Rob Jones' phone number, Laura Dickerson's, and their voicemail has been full all week and no one can get a hold of them.
Mm.
All we did was just keep blowing up the phones.
Yeah.
I would love to say something. I would love to say something real quick. Can I say something?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. This is Mike Turner.
Hi, Mike.
We have plenty of people on this call, so it's kind of confusing. But
yeah,
after hearing this brother's statements, my God. My God. I think he told the true story of what's going on at his facility. And I think it's a fucking shame. And
yes, it
I
is.
Don't swear very often. Anybody knows me, I don't swear very often. But I think it's a fucking shame. Seriously.
It is.
You guys tried your damnedest to do what's right for your membership. And the people above you totally ignored you, totally said, we're beyond above you. We can do what we want to do. This is what you have to do. That's what I get from this. And my God,
I hope this is what I get from this. Ray Curry is the president, and he oversees every region. He would have had to approve that. He would have had to allow her to do that.
I think so, too. Yes.
Yeah. Let me interrupt one more time.
But beyond that, real quick, I'm just, you know what? I feel so far. I just feel sorry for you guys that are trying to sit there and do what's right. And you get backlash from your own fucking union for you sitting there doing what's right for the membership. It honestly does disgust me. It leaves a fucking pit in my heart, man. It shouldn't be. It's just disgusting. And I don't know how else to say it. That should never happen. That should fucking never happen in our union.
That's what we tried explaining to our international rep since COVID started. We've been working 7 days a week, 3 shifts a day, 7 days a week. Sometimes 12 hours a day, sometimes more. And you want to put us on critical status?
No.
How many more hours can you get out of us? Now you're making it where it's unsafe for your members.
But let me ask you this. How many shifts do you have there?
Three shifts.
Okay.
We work three shifts.
You going from three down to one?
No, we work three shifts every day of the week, 7 days a week.
But I thought they said they're going to go down to one.
Hang on a second. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt, but seriously, how does three shifts work how does three shifts work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week?
We're filling in for vacation and absenteeism. We're still short 50 people on the floor. That's what I was coming in. Mismanaged.
Does the shifts overlap each other?
I don't want to interrupt, but seriously, you have three shifts working 7 hours or 12 hours a day. You have three shifts working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And on top of that, you have to have another back force, basically, of employees to fill you in. What is the true problem there? Seriously. Three shifts, 12 hours a day. What's the true problem? Is it they do not pay enough to have people working for them? Is that the problem? They do not have enough manpower to actually fill vacancies? I'll leave it at that, man. I'll shut it up. They do not have people cover you, correct?
This is how it goes. We have three shifts. We run 8 hours. But we have so many people working 10s and 12s to cover absenteeism, vacations, FMLA, unforeseen circumstances, all that. Every plant has that. Now for wages, yeah, our startup's a little bit janky, but we have a contract coming up. We're not going to open up a whole contract just for starting pay. So we're going to wait a few months, move around with the inflation, and correct starting pay, correct after 90 days, you're immediately hired full pay. That's the way I'll subject on critical status. But it's just misutilization of their manpower. We are short 50 people, but we have 50 people wanting to work over, wanting to come in early. They just don't know how to manage their manpower. And that's why we're in strong opposition of we do not need critical status, because these guys just want power over their hourly workers.
Right.
If they knew how to run their overtime, they'd be just fine.
They just want the ability to fucking say whatever it is.
I got to interrupt
seriously,
guys.
Go ahead,
Go ahead. You said seriously. Finish your thought, and I've got to interrupt you after that.
Well, what I'm getting to is seriously is that the people managing that company does not have the comprehension at all to actually have a conversation with people and make things happen. That to me, that's the bottom line. Like, am I wrong?
Absolutely not.
Not at all.
We can move on.
Okay, we got a lot of trolls calling right now. And if your Skype number, I will not answer you anymore. I put them in the green room. And, they were saying some nasty stuff, so I X'd them out. But you call in with your number, if you got balls enough to do that, I will put you on, and you can say what you want to say, but rest assured I'm going to get your phone number, and I'm going to broadcast it. How about that? I'll broadcast your number because you like to be a smartass. I'll let everybody know your number. How was that? Okay?
Hit him, baby. Get
I'm about to whip somebody's ass. I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, if you don't leave me alone, you're going to have to send me home, because I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
Take it away, guys.
Sounds as balls. I'm just going to say this. Is it really truly that hard to represent the membership and do what's right? Is it truly that fucking hard? Should we pack a lunch and fight, or should we just go home? Because, come on, is it fucking that hard to do what we should be doing? That's all. That's all I'm going to fucking say for the whole fucking night, actually. Good night.
I can acknowledge one thing. It doesn't matter whether you're used to cursing or not. When you think of the relationship that the union has with management and the way they jointly treat our people, it's hard to avoid a string of profanity. Tonight has been some really interesting stuff. I think what illustrates is why we need to start fighting forward. We have a 40-year experiment of working with the companies, and no matter what we give up, they always want more. And it
sure
looks to me like they're trying to take their workforce down to absolute zero. You know, they use all kinds of tricks. The union has surrendered its principles one by one, and it no longer has any principles. There's nothing this union's not willing to give up. And it's going to have to be a rank-and-file rebellion. They're not interested in representing us. They're interested in working with the company on the behalf of the company and themselves. That's been well demonstrated. This process of ignoring what the membership wants has been accelerating over the years. Don, you can probably remember loads of times in Flint, Michigan, when the membership of a plant has turned a contract down and they brought it back for another vote.
That's right. So I have
these people that are wiser than us, and the reward for cooperating with General Motors in Flint, Michigan, instead of having 80,000 workers, we got, what, about 8,000 left?
If that many. I don't think they have that many.
If Solidarity House doesn't understand it, we need to start to understand it, that nothing will satisfy these people. If they had their way, you'd be working for minimum wage plus tips.
That's true.
You're right, Paul. Absolutely right.
And the only reason that the only reason that they're paying anything or they're offering any type of employment after 90 days, and they're actually hiring better than the terms of the contract in some facilities, is because they can't staff them. 30% of the workforce exited with COVID. People that were eligible to retirement are like, well, I'm not going to go to work with a mask on. I got my time in to retire. And they all left.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big hole where there used to be employment. So now if they want to hire people, I mean, when you're hiring at $16.72 or less than $17 an hour, and you look at Chick-fil-A's paying $20 an hour, and neither one of them have a pension, there's no long-term benefit for being there.
Right.
Why would they stay?
Right. And you don't have to worry about repetitive motion conditions when you're working in a fast food restaurant.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, they
and because of inflation, now they're not paying the market. They're not even paying fair market value for unskilled labor outside of the industry. They can't even keep up with normal businesses everywhere.
Lemon Scotty, you guys are suppressed by a contract
that's not going to stand.
Right.
Lemon Scotty in the chat room said they have a we can do that mentality, and that needs to change.
Right.
They don't have a choice. They're not going to keep employees at this rate. You got a bunch of 92s that are getting ready to retire, and once they're gone, it's going to worsen the problem. Because you can't hire new people as your old people are retiring through attrition. The problem's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I think all this focus, you know, they're saying, oh, experience. You got to have the most experience to go to the bargaining table. A fool could negotiate under these conditions. They can't hire people at the rate that they have negotiated right now. So anybody that goes to the table is going to look like a superstar. They're going to give you stuff that you didn't even ask for just to get people to come work for them.
I don't see how we could do worse. You know, at least inexperienced people that come off the floor understand what the problems are. You know, the reason we have all these tiers and these low starting wages is the union actually agreed with management that production workers are worthless.
That's right.
They're easily replaceable. They're not worth much. They agreed with the company that we were overpaid and underworked.
Exactly.
Yes. And they could get away with it.
And all these people that are on staff and all you people that are getting ready to vote, why in the hell would you vote for somebody that can tell you they've been there for 20 years, they've been there for 25 years, there was just a tradesman on talking, and he was talking about lines of demarcation. Well, hell, Sean Thain gave that shit up. He was part of those negotiations. Let them talk to you guys about how their track record is. I'm going with somebody that, as you say, has no bargaining experience, but he has no track record. Hang on.
He
has no track record. I'm sorry. You know, okay, well, they say that, but he really does. He's told you people the truth for, 8 years now? And
Jimmy,
so has Mike, if you listen to Brother Turner.
Right. Jimmy, why would anybody vote for anyone that was in the Solidarity House when all this crap was going down?
That's what I'm trying to say, people. Wake up. You got, 16 pled guilty felonies from this Curry Team administration, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's people that's been on that staff or past people. That's why I wanted to read that letter about that chairman coming out of Fort Wayne running for VP. I don't know how to say his name, Richard Letourneau or Lucero, whatever the hell it is. But he's one of your biggest that's been involved in sexual harassment. But he didn't say that on the interview, did he?
No. No,
that's
he didn't.
No,
mean.
They didn't bring it up either.
No, but this monitor knows all about this shit.
They also know there's 19 open indictments out of the monitor's questionnaire's person's mouth. So we know there's possibly 19 other guilty pleas coming. Who the hell are they? Well, we can't tell you that because they haven't been charged as a crime. But I might vote for one of them fuckers.
Whoever they are.
Yeah.
Well, I might vote for one of them fuckers.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
They think this stuff is okay.
Hang
on. They're totally unrepentant.
Okay, we're going to go to 9 o'clock tonight, and I canceled the show. I was supposed to be on the show. I called them and told them I'll be late. So 9 o'clock, you got 50 minutes. Go ahead, guys.
Okay. Well, the worst thing is they're totally unrepentant. They don't think any of these people did anything wrong.
Unrepentant, unapologetic.
They believe they were entitled to this. And the government's picking on them, that tells you they don't plan to change anything at all. They want to run this union the way it's been run. They want to find ways to develop side gigs so they can make more money. They're going to continue to go to the bargaining table and give up the very little that we still have left. They don't really want to do anything for retirees. They don't want to do much of anything except work with management to help management be more competitive. And, you know, as far as these agreements where they put you on what is an emergency status where they can work you 7 days a week forever, it's not just mismanagement. The union has not done anything to try to resist plant closings. And so they don't have capacity. They used to have other plants they could put work in, and they're gone. So they just want to continue to squeeze and squeeze the people that are left. They don't care about your family life. They don't care about your marriage. They don't care about your physical or emotional health. And I would urge anybody who is listening to this program, except for the people that are incorrigible and are feeding at the trough, those of you that have been the victims of jointness need to fight back and vote for people that are not members of this administrative caucus.
Here, here. Here, here. And the quote my good friend Jim made us. They've been stealing from you people so long that they thought they were entitled to it.
All right. So,
you were entitled to the dynamic of the workforce has changed, and this whole my way or the highway bullshit's not working no more. The options outside the door are better.
In the 80s, they called that a plateau. Stephen P. Yoki says, once you get to the plateau, you're good. And that meant the region. Once you got to the region, you were above being touched, baby.
So they claim.
Well, it was under their system. Think about it. You couldn't vote for them. Now you got a chance to vote for them. Don't put them sumbitches back in there, please.
Yeah. Well, they think they're entitled to less, and or to more, and you're entitled to less. They think like management. My mother in the 1960s worked in a non-union cotton mill in North Carolina. You didn't get a break or lunch. You only had you had some cheese and crackers at your machine, and when the machine broke down, you ate. And if General Motors gets their way, that's pretty much what you will have.
Right. My aunt worked in a shirt factory in Athens, Alabama, and my aunt, you might see Sweet Sue chicken on your shelves at the grocery store. My aunt worked there in Athens, Alabama, no union, and they worked their ass off, worked hard, and they wanted to go union. They moved them to Georgia, Sweet Sue.
Well, one of the reasons the program is not working as well for the big three now is back in the 80s, they had a lot of people working there who had a mortgage, two car payments, and two kids. and they pretty much felt like they had to do anything the company want. But younger people aren't buying into that mentality. They don't want to work 80 hours a week to have a $300,000 house, a snowmobile, and a motorcycle, and no life. And I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see young people are telling them where to shove the program.
Yeah, what good's all the toys when you don't have time to enjoy it?
That's right. When they even want you to work Christmas.
Hello?
Hello.
I'm here.
Oh. Oh. I just went.
I'm here.
I just wanted to
went deadly silent there.
586, you're on. 586, you're on. And Carrie, we can hear you, dear.
This is Stephanie.
Oh, Stephanie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And I think
so,
this is Carrie. Okay, Stephanie,
always,
go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Something that I've always wondered when it comes to contract time. For instance, we talk about the temps and the tiers and the turnover, which we all know that high turnover means that we're spending a ton of money in training. And not only is it the training aspect of it, but it's also quality issues and that kind of thing, which can be extremely costly. I mean, there's a lot of studies that show that turnover is very, very detrimental to any business. So where is the UAW side of going into a plant to investigate how much money we're spending by having these people turning over constantly? Because I know that our turnover in our plant is high, especially when you come to the temps, they're walking out daily. You know, we need to have our hands in the pot when it comes to making these calculations of how much money this is costing the company. And, you know, it's a good argument for when we go to the table to say, listen, we're worth it, and we know, and this is why. And I don't understand why we don't do these kind of things, especially like, you know, they go in and they say, we can't afford to pay everybody the same wage. And we just go, okay. And we just take their word for it. You know what
well,
I mean?
That's the key.
We
take the word for it.
We need to have our hands more on the business side of it, is I guess what I'm saying.
I don't think they've seen the turnover until recently. This is all because they paid a higher wage. They had higher compensation levels. It was something people wanted to do. They actually had ergo. They actually did have health and safety. They did do the things that they were supposed to. And within the last 2 decades, that's completely shifted. Not only are all these programs not in place, but the wages are not higher than outside the industry.
Right.
So the turnover is going to continue to grow. They're just now seeing the cracks. Management's aware of it because they're offering. Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say in the 70s and 80s and 90s, you hired into a big three plant to better yourself. That's not the case anymore. It's you just hire in as a, you know, as a transitionary employee looking for something better to come along.
You know, the funny part is we warned them. We, you know, and you said something to me the last time we were on. You said something about it ringing hollow. We told them what was going to happen if the wages were reduced. We told them that people, they weren't going to be able to staff the plants. They didn't listen to any of it. And now they're starting to see the fruition of their impropriety.
Yeah.
Not just
yeah.
the union, but the company. The company on their part is having issues staffing, and they know
sure.
what the problem is. You've negotiated a wage rate and have these people locked into a contract that is below the market value for non-skilled labor.
Sure. You can make $20 an hour starting out washing cars and changing oil in Petoskey, Michigan. And
literally. And there's more of it.
A lot better working conditions, too. And any young woman who has the gift of gab can make $30 an hour working in a decent restaurant or more.
Even truck drivers are making $30 an hour. That's the legacy wage. That's the traditional wage. You go get a truck driving job now, it pays. If you're on a local route truck, when I quit doing it 30 years ago, you know, you'd be lucky to make $15 an hour. Now they're making more than production workers in an auto plant. Why the hell would I want to go to a job where I don't know the schedule? I don't know the schedule that I'm working for the shift that I'm working until the end of that shift. Who the hell would want to do that? Plus all the additional injuries that are accumulated over time and everything else that we know comes along with it.
Yeah. Us so-called legacy workers put up with it because we got paid well. And we knew we were going to suck them for a pension when we retired.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
Yeah, when you don't have that.
Yeah, and, you don't have.
And we had protection from speed up back in the 80s and 90s.
But I'm thinking it's going to come back. Everything's going to, the pendulum swinging back the other way, and the management realized the folly of their ways and that they cannot maintain production levels. They can't maintain quality. They can't do the things that they wanted to do or expected to do at the wage rates they were going to force people to work for.
Right.
It's not reality. And reality is smacking them right in the face.
As long as you leave that leadership that's currently in there, and the pendulum will not swing back.
Possible.
Okay, because
I mean,
they are trying
to
destroy. They are trying to destroy our union. They are trying to destroy the founders of the union. Or as I always say, UAW, United Auto Workers, Aerospace and Agriculture. They are trying to destroy those founders.
Well, that's
and
one of the
true, but
that,
I think
that's why we got nurses, we got teachers, we're casino workers, cafeteria workers. That's why we got all these people to take our place. That's a fact.
Right. They need the votes.
Well, not just that. I mean, you got to remember that these companies are telling us we must be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets. You know damn well that pendulum ain't going to swing the other direction as long as we have this leadership. I agree with Adrian and Don 100%.
Right.
That's true. I believe it. But on the floor level, when the union and the company can no longer control the employee, when they're just not going to work for what you said that you're going to pay them, and they start walking off, then there's also going to be power that's restored to the floor.
It's not power. Don't know what power is if you wipe out the legacy worker and what we can tell you. You guys don't know shit about AIF, do you? Do you know what AIF is? How it works with COLA? Do you know what AIF stands for, sir? Yeah, that's right.
You're talking about the additional
AIF kept your COLA and kept up with your wages. That's what brought our labor up. That took care of automation. Automation replaced us. That went into building your hourly wage. I'm sorry, people, but you need us. That's why Curry doesn't want us.
With automation being in these plants and is getting more advanced, and the fact that we're going from combustible to electrical vehicles, they will continue to weaken the automotive sector in the UAW until they break this union.
That's right.
Or until you got no play.
Yeah.
During the contracts, I'm sure everybody's starting to notice it. It's during the contracts what they're doing with all this tier, temp, legacy, whatever the title. Mm-hmm. They're actually pitting each group against one another. So one group might lose more than the other group. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? That's how they're keeping people, quote unquote, that are making less still working. Well, we're going to just give you a little tiny taste of something. But what they don't understand is they should be legacy in 90 days.
Right. They should be.
You
know how many you know how many emails I've gotten this week about their 401s? tanking again. I got it with Obama. I got it. Now I'm getting it with Biden. And he's worse. Yeah. He's a whole lot worse than President Obama.
Yeah.
And he lost a lot.
Yeah.
But I want to say something to you people. See what your pensions did? Don's ain't changed. Mine ain't changed. I'm just trying to tell you, that's why we need pensions for everybody. Brian Keller, Mike Turnos, and those people were telling you support that thought.
That's right. They'll fight to get it.
I'm going to say the union and management have both worked hard, the union leadership, the top leadership, to destroy the union culture. You know, years ago, if you were working in the plant and they started to mess with you, you knew
That's
you
right.
were next. And the union lead and the union members, there was a principle there that an injury to one is an injury to all. And
That's right.
They have tried to break us up into small groups and pit us against one another. It started many years ago when they started pitting the interest of trades against production. And production got screwed royally when they outsourced all the good jobs, the sub-assembly, janitorial, seat build. You know, you could give a whole long list. But it started there, and that's why they she's right. That's why they wanted the tiers, so they could pit the tiers against one another.
Well, not just that. You got to remember that these companies, when they roll out a five-year plan, they're 5 years ahead of us on knowing what's happening. And so is the Solidarity House.
Yeah.
And so if the Solidarity House is behind closed doors with these companies discussing the five-year plan, and we know the membership know nothing about this until not even until after the ratification of the tentative agreement, because we're just seeing the highlights.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the language hides behind the MOUs, and we don't normally see the MOUs until after the ratification of the tentative agreement. So my thing is, even after these indictments, those people that been at the Solidarity House all these years that weren't brought up by experience, they were brought up through nepotism. They were groomed. And they allowed these things to happen because they had a five-year insight on what was taking place, and they kept the membership in the dark. They lied to us, they deceived us, and they threatened us into ratifying these company-friendly concessionary agreements.
Sure.
And we continue to go along with it. It's time for the membership to wake up. Anytime that the Solidarity House, your leadership, is violating the UAW Constitution, especially Articles 2, and they don't support equality, that's why we have a tier and temp structure, and they keep pushing these concessionary agreements on us, it's time to make the change. These people are going to say what they want to you to get you to support them so they can continue to negotiate these agreements in the company's interest, not in the membership. Yeah. So if you want to keep losing, keep supporting these same people that keep lying to you year after year after year.
Well,
there's
the
no way that we can
like,
be, there's no way that we can be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets while these companies are making global profits and they're getting local, state, and federal tax abatements. You weaken the middle class, you weaken our purchasing power, you're going to weaken the U.S. dollar, you're going to weaken your communities, and these small businesses ain't going to be able to survive.
Right.
It's already happening.
Well,
what you're saying is already happening.
The one thing we need to think about, too, is, the union or management does lay out their plans to the union, but they don't tell them everything. I remember in the 1990s, Stephen Jochisch negotiated there'd be no planned closings at General Motors. They shut down four plants and said, we're not closing those plants. We're just idling them. You know, didn't matter. There was no work in them and no employees. So the thing is, it's not like management is honest with the union. What it gets right. back to is like Dave Yetzaw said years ago, management's playing chess and the union's playing checkers. Management's playing a much more sophisticated game than the union is. They are five steps ahead of them.
That's perfect because they'll idle a plant, and then what they do is they bring in lower-paid workers.
Yeah.
Lordstown.
Yeah. But management didn't lie to them. It's just that on our side, we think that we are so smart that we allow them to play us.
Yeah. Bravo
by using
there,
words
Adrian.
Like idle, which here. Idle means no work. That's damn near saying closed.
Yeah.
You know,
if
we're that dumb, which our representatives, they try to play us, the workers, as being as dumb as they are, because we are not. We're not damn dumb. And they're not that damn smart.
When I was in the metal shop, we used to, if somebody got put in the hot box, the committee man would come by and say, go ahead and take a tip off. And, you know, you got antifreeze spraying all over the place. So that shuts the line down. I would do it. The next guy would do it until they realized we better get this guy out of the hot box and put him back on the line. That's what we used to do in the body shop, and that used to go along everywhere in the plant.
Yeah. We're not powerless. You know, when I was working at Pontiac East Assembly on the floor there in the chassis line, they brought this piece of tooling over to me to use because what they want to do is eliminate an employee. I worked in the whole off a lot. They spent $45,000 on this piece of tooling, they told me. And I was not very cooperative. After about 6 months, they took the piece of tooling away, and I saved the job. You know, we can fight the companies. We don't have to just lay down and do whatever they want us to do. You know, the idea was they were going to throw this piece of tooling on me, and I was going to work double time, work faster, and help them eliminate the person next to me, and I wouldn't do it. The foreman hauled me up in the office and said to me, you're working like an old man. I'm going to penalize you. I just told him I'm working like a 45-year-old man that's got to work 9 over 6 days a week, and I will never willingly help you eliminate another person's job. And I didn't get penalized. And they took the tool away, like I said, after a few months. We can fight back.
We can fight back, but we got to get solidarity back out on these floors.
Sure.
Because everybody is basically so defeated because, I see it every day. It's all for yourself. There's no solidarity out on the floors.
Yeah.
You know what? And you can do it in the plants, and that takes care of rebalance. But there's an entirely different side to this that nobody's seeing. The whole outsourcing of sub-assembly and sequencing, if you don't understand what that's about, let me tell you, this is what they do. They take it out of the facility. Let's just say, for instance, you've got a rotor line, okay? It takes 20 people to build this rotor. They'll take this work and they'll stick it into a sub-assembly or an LLC facility. They will lean it out to its leanest form, and then the chairman will get credited for negotiating this great contract to bring work back in-house. And what they've essentially done is when it returns to the plant, it takes 10 people to do the job. They sidestep all of the shop rules, the ergo, health and safety, and every other tool that a line worker has to be able to fight their work in the plants, and they do it outside where there's literally no protection from the union.
Well,
and then they insource it back to the plant after they lean up.
A big problem, too, is, you know, I've heard a lot of times from the committee people, they're so stretched because they're representing over 100 people. Then you're hell-bent on trying to find somebody from health and safety. You're hell bent on trying to get somebody from your job standards. I mean, because those are appointed positions. So if you got you're sitting in an appointed position with health and safety or job standards, you got a guaranteed job. You're not really, if you're not elected to those positions, you're not going to be like, well, geez, I'm voted in, so I better start working.
Right. They wait until our election time.
Yeah.
They start working.
Right. They need health and safety. Those jobs need to be voted on because I don't see them coming down doing no time studies, and I don't see that here.
Right.
That
takes care of rebalancing within the facility. It doesn't help with the work that they've outsourced, leaned out, and brought back. If you hear a chairman is negotiating insourcing work that's already been outsourced, that job has already been stripped down to its leanest form, using the least amount of people and equipment that they could never force a line worker in a VOL plant to perform, because they'll call health and safety. They'll call who do these people, these LLCs, call? You're lucky if you have people in health and safety in these facilities.
All right, no better.
It's either do the job or go.
Go ahead.
I don't think a lot of people know exactly what's going on as far as the work, you know, as far as outsourcing. When it comes back to the plan, it's not what it was when it left. It's reduced down to its leanest form.
How many times we have to shut the truck plant down because are we getting crap from other places? Well, the crap we used to make, it was good, and we never had to shut the line down. We had the wrong starters one time. They were putting them on the trucks. We had to change them out, 32 of them.
And that's, you know what, if you go back to Henry Ford, when he was still alive, one of the reasons that he wanted to bring everything in-house, they used to own their own ships. They owned their own steel plants. It was because they could control the quality.
They own their own tires,
too.
They made their own tires, too. And I think Argentina, they made them. That's where
I worked at a plant that made rotors, windshield wipers, the plant I hired in at. It was a parts plant. I got laid off, 2008 or 9, I can't remember. I can't remember now. So I was in the gym pool. And then I went to another plant. Well, so our plant chairman kept telling us, oh, you guys are coming back to your home plant. Just hang tight. Well, they were shipping our jobs overseas to India and everywhere else. So I got forced to an assembly plant with a whole lot of other people. And when I got to the assembly plant in orientation, they told us in orientation that this was our new home plant and that there was no quote-unquote Ford-paying work at our original plant. Now, see, that was in, 2008 or 9. So I seen that writing
right
on the wall,
and
I thought to myself, this right here is going to be the new norm.
And it is, slowly. Look at Rawsonville and Sterling in the 07 agreement. They said they agreed to a 20% cap on low-tier workers so that way they could never outnumber the legacy. That was the initial,
I worked at Rawsonville.
Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, they lied
because during the contract and even in the highlights, nowhere did it say that Rawsonville and Sterling were supposed to be entirely low tier. That didn't come until after the ratification.
Correct.
There's no way in hell that the people would have supported that.
There wouldn't have been. So they took us people, they took a big majority of people and put them in, laid us off and put us in the gym pool. And then when they got us to another plant, that's when they told us.
Yeah, they couldn't let you go back to Rawsonville if that was your return to base. If that was your home unit, they couldn't send you back there because that entire facility was slated to be entirely low tier, both of those.
Yes, but there's still Ford workers there, a top tier. But you had to have, at that time, you had to have, I think it was 86 seniority to be able to make the cut. And that whoever was an 86 seniority, 87, early 87, you were being put in the gym pool.
Wow, I didn't know you were from Rockingville. I mean, that completely changes.
Yeah. Oh, I've been through the gauntlet.
Right, and I've met people outside of the industry that left it because they were working, one of them was working at Sterling. It was the same, you know, they were making axles, but the fact was that the parts plants were on so much overtime, they didn't want to pay traditional wages to the parts facilities, even Sandusky, Visteon.
Yeah, you got to remember that Sterling was Visteon way before that, too.
And so was our plant. Our plant was Ford, then it went to Visteon, and then it went back to Ford.
ACH.
Went back to Ford.
They made it ACH was automatic components holding, was their holding company. During the bankruptcy, when Chrysler and General Motors were going through bankruptcy, Ford was the only one to take back their parts suppliers, and they renamed them ACH at that time. That was just a transition. They were going to wait until after everything settled out, the bankruptcy and everything, because they renegotiated in 2009. You know, wait till everything settled out, and then they sold off all the plants to foreign competitors. But the thing is, even though foreign entities own these facilities, they're still staffed with Ford Motor Company management. The LLCs are still locally, the plant manager down the street is the plant manager at the LLC.
Yeah.
Where they're taking and leaning out the work and outsourcing it. They're doing the sub-assembly work, and then they bring it back in-house. He is manager of both facilities.
And Rawsonville just got a huge, they're doing something with the batteries. I think they got like $130 million in funding Ford gave them for those batteries. But, you know, that's not a legacy pay work. So.
Well,
yeah.
you heard, like, with the Ford plants, they brought in these engineers, special engineers now, that take over time studies and everything. There's nothing done with our unions anymore, especially these transmission plants.
Yeah,
they'll lean these jobs and, you know, outsource most of the jobs. And just lean them up to where they don't need the people.
There is just something way wrong with where we were, what we're supposed to be doing here, and where we're going for years now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's something else. It is something else.
I mean, not only the corruptions at the top, like everybody was speaking on here, it's down at the local levels. Bad.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Mean, really bad.
Oh, my gosh. I'm still wondering, in my mind, I still wonder why I'm voting in a trash can in 2022. Why are we still at our locals voting in a trash can?
Yeah, I know.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. And I've said it before. I know a lot of people that would want to go vote, but they said, why do I want to vote in a trash can?
That's right.
There's no transparency there if it's getting counted, right? You know, I mean, that's just a no-brainer. But until we start getting these people out that want to run like a regime, there's no way anything's going to get better, even at the local level or up there. Damn, if you can – and how about we just start voting on the people that negotiate our contracts, the bargainers? Because to be honest with you – if I'm only getting a holiday back per contract, is that's the only thing I'm getting at this point, then they need to be fired. You know? I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I think all the bylaws and everything need to be restructured. Because it's like,
absolutely.
I mentioned, you're corrupt, you get indicted, I don't think you should get a pension, ever. You should be sayonara, you're done,
amen.
Out the door.
They could have fixed that at the convention. They had the opportunity to do it at the convention. They could have.
So
you can't take away a pension from somebody who's guilty and you found out after the fact, but you can make changes to their criteria for their eligibility for future pensioners. If you steal from the membership, you don't get a pension. I mean, they might still get it from the company.
Well, not
but they won't
that.
Get it from the union.
You gotta,
the members aren't paying their frickin' pension.
That's right.
They got got those pensions and benefits under false pretenses.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have an issue going to court and getting those things back from them, being that they got them under false pretenses.
I agree, and I believe what you say when you say that you're going after them. But the other
Absolutely.
Part of it, you don't have to ask permission. You just make a change at the convention. If you could vote yourself a pay raise on your pension, you can change the requirements for being eligible for one.
You damn
well,
right.
Well, the issue I had is how did Ray Curry sign a memorandum to increase their pensions, but they had to go in front of the delegates for their salary increase? Why wouldn't you have to go in front of the delegates for your pension increase?
This should be subject to the delegates' approval. Not that I have faith in the delegates, but once you straighten the union out, yes.
Right.
You know, that's a good check and balance.
Yeah. And there's got to be something in there stating that the internet during the convention that nobody can interview the delegates before and during the convention process.
Yep.
Right.
Because
and
the problem
going
is,
on.
Yeah, that's the problem is the leadership is getting these people behind closed doors prior to the convention, promising them, threatening them, telling them if you don't follow the game plan, then you're out. All these private meetings have to end.
Yep.
And where was the monitor at this past convention when all that stuff was going on?
You mean after
he was asleep at the wheel.
He was there.
Damn.
I saw him.
You can't tell me he didn't know that was going on. Well, you were saying he was sleeping.
Look, we're paying for the federal oversight. And the reason we're paying for the federal oversight is because of the corruption and the collusion.
Yep.
So if we're paying for the federal oversight and the federal oversight is allowing the Solidarity House to roll out the rules of the convention, there's a problem with that, right? The other problem
is
how come the federal oversight, it's one thing, okay, not to post anything on union boards by elected officials, stating that you endorse this candidate. I understand that. But nothing was stopping the federal oversight from posting information to let the membership know about the direct voting, the convention, and the election. None of this information has been posted to inform the membership.
You know, in what court of law is the criminal, and I don't want to say that everybody is a criminal, but the entity itself is under indictment by the federal government.
Okay.
In what
you might
of
not
law,
be a criminal.
Does the criminal get to choose? Do they get to choose their own punishment?
No, but they've gotten away with it, just like the ones that turned a blind eye to this corruption.
I agree.
They continue to bargain
like
these concessionary agreements, and the damn membership keeps supporting that crap.
Yeah, and they got to write the rules for the reform, for the direct voting. They wrote the rules. They figured out the timeline for when the dates are going to be, for when the ballots go out, every single aspect of it, and set the rules in favor of or giving advantage to the incumbents against anybody else who might try to run against them.
All I can say is if these people get back into office, the retirees ain't going to see an increase in their pension.
No, we won't.
Tier 2 ain't going to get a pension of health care. Temps ain't going to get rolled over after 90 days. None of these positive things, these items that we put as contract demands, they're not going to be answered.
That's right.
And we're going to keep moving. We're going to keep moving backwards because everybody expects that. Oh, you know, we got a contract coming up next September, and if we don't elect these people with experience that's been in there for the last 40 years or 20 years, that's basically deteriorated this union from within by going from 1.5 million auto workers to 150,000 today, and these concessionary contracts of losing pensions and time and a half after eight, and combining
that's
the skilled trades and COLA, we're just gonna keep repeating it until we have nothing left.
That's right. And when does the membership's experience in loss trump the experience of the sitting representative that negotiated the losses for him? At some point, there's got to be an end.
Well, but it starts with the membership. So if the membership keeps supporting Ray Curry's caucus or those that belong to Ray Curry's caucus, don't expect anything different. Matter of fact, you can expect it to get worse.
We only got 20 minutes.
Oops.
May I say something, please?
No.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I want to apologize to all of the other units that are not automotive, aerospace, and agriculture. I want them to understand if this is happening to those three entities, what do you think will happen to you eventually? Just a question for you to start asking yourself.
That's right.
Because if they're not representing those three, that's why I keep bringing up about the founders. If they're not representing them, think about it. Why
is whoever speaks the loudest, they'll try to suppress. They're going to try to shut them down and pit the other sectors against them. This is the new way.
This is the way. And so we're not against any other units. We just want you to stop and think. You all are new to the UAW, except for clerical. They're not that new. They've been there for a long time. But there are so many new units, and you have to look at the plight that's going on with the ones that founded this union. And what we're trying to get everybody to understand, Constitution is like our Bible. And if it's not being followed or it's being interpreted incorrectly, because that is going on too.
Yeah.
Interpretations are there in the back of the Constitution. We don't need anybody to tell us that that's a lie too. But
and
anyway,
I want to add something after you're done, Adrian.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, management, I've got friends in management. We used to call them foremen. Now they're supervisors. Well, they're pissed off. They were pissed off because we're not getting what we used to get. So they're pissed. And they started taking benefits away from retirees, management retirees. My wife's grandfather, yeah, he was a supervisor. He did over paint parts plants and everything over in Detroit. And he lost a lot of his benefits. So there you go. They're pissed off because when we got a raise, a good raise, they got a good raise.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, they were buying them out for a while.
Yeah, they were buying them out before I retired. The ones that weren't doing their jobs.
Adrian made a good point today that we need to make sure that all of these sectors are represented at our convention as well. I wasn't aware until she told us today that a lot of them weren't able to be represented due to costs and that kind of thing, you know, and international should be forking the bill. We shouldn't be paying for that at a local level.
No.
Just something to think about, you know, just different things. There's so many changes that need to be made going forward, but those people are just as important as everybody else.
Everyone of us are important.
What was?
You know what, though? Listen, there's been a big change since 07. Now, I've been watching this ever since then. That's when I first started fighting, was back in 07, before the contract was ratified. And to see back then from the union, and not necessarily the international, but the members, the shift, back then it was all Ford. We didn't care what happened at GM and Chrysler because they were competitors. If one of them was to fail, we'd pick up their volume pan, and that's the way it was viewed. So you went from there to 2015, then 2019 there was a big shift where on the internet we all organized. We all found each other. That's when all these reform groups popped up. So then GM workers are actually looking at Ford workers. Ford workers are looking at GM and Chrysler, and everybody kind of came together. So, and then now it's the sectors. Now it's a matter of bringing all the sectors together and thinking, obviously, you know, the wage rates are different depending on what sector you're in. Whatever the work rules are completely different than manufacturing. You know, in understanding those sectors and what their needs are is going to be the way forward. It's the only way to fix the union is to bring everybody together. The international be the middleman between us and the other sectors.
Yes, they've kept us apart way too long. All the devices.
If everybody's standing together, they have nothing. There's
that
they don't have the power anymore.
That's right. Stand together or fall together. One or the other,
right.
Kids.
How
one
well,
the
right now they're. Go ahead.
We've got 5 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. Whoa, somebody's screaming.
Sorry, I got a question. It'll only take me a second.
Oh, go ahead.
Uh-oh.
Go ahead. Did we lose you?
Uh-oh.
You must have muted yourself because your phone number is still there. Hello.
We're waiting the question.
I know it was important.
Yeah.
Maybe that was 313. It 313 dropped for some reason.
Uh-oh.
We had a lot of drop numbers tonight.
How you feeling now, Don? You feeling better?
No.
You were worried at the beginning.
Yeah. Oh. Well, you guys pissed me off, so I get.
Got you feeling better.
Did I miss something?
Mad after doing this show about how I'm getting
right.
Screwed.
Now he's going to do another phone, you flipping jerk.
You got to
tell me how bad I'm getting screwed. I get pissed off. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
give the donation address and how to get a hold of Brian and give him some cash.
Yes.
You know what?
Oh, excuse me.
Even if they don't get money, Adrian, the people printing out the flyers at the local level, that is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah.
I love the fact that our members have supported Brian, his candidacy. Oh, they've just been wonderful. It just brings tears to my heart every day with all the messages I get and things that they're doing for us because they believe in Brian.
And
but
before
anyway,
we go off the air, would you give the address, Adrian? Jesus.
I'm going to give it right.
God, if you're going to start crying, I'm going to end the show. So hurry up.
There's a Cash App, $ Committee BLK. That's under Cash App. If you would like to send a check or money order, you make the check out to Brian Keller, IUAW President.
Okay.
P.O. Box 2483, 2483, Belleville, BELLEVILLE, Michigan, 48112.
That's right. Instead of a check.
And I'd like to
Go ahead, Brian.
I'd like to thank everybody for all their help and their support. This wouldn't be possible without the membership coming together in unity and help push this reform. So I truly appreciate your support and your vote come November. Thank you.
All right. That's our next president.
You're here.
Let's leave you, but we'll be back next Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Adrian, it will be crying around 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, so tune in for that.
1 o'clock.
She gets all of that. Damn, Adrian. I swear.
Good night, everybody.
I have a little Adrian. I know it's in the
community
you're in, buddy.
Good night, all.
Good night, man.
Good night,
buddy.
Good
night.
Good
night. I won't say what I was going to say, but Adrian.
I don't know. It's skipping, so I'm not hearing
it
all.
I'm not either. I can hear you, but I can't hear Don.
Right.